Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Well, my darling Star Party people, we are back. It's me, Sandy. Hi, Bessie.
Hi.
So excited to jump into this Sagittarius season discussion. Do we want to do a quick addendum to Scorpio season?
I feel like it might need a little bit of an addendum. How did it all go down for you, dear Sandy?
We were just laughing because it's like all of my old patterns just come right to the surface during Scorpio season. It's like, you know, a little volcano erupts and all the deep down stuff just wants to come right to the surface to be looked at.
Yeah. Real surfacing. Like I was thinking, sometimes I get the image of Scorpio with like a metal detector or something that's drawing. I'm trying to think of other things that are similar to metal detectors that like draw or magnetize, you know, kind of things to the surface and that action of overturning. But yeah, I had quite kind of like a literal, well, maybe it was a literal / spiritual, ethereal experience of like a lot of ghosts, like actual ghosts, my own ghosts, like some ghost hunting. Yeah. Some like paranormal activity for sure. Which I always like knew kind of theoretically in my mind, but I think I'm realizing more and more how much water is like connected to the invisible realm, you know, fire too, to a certain extent. I feel like both of those are connected to invisibility and bringing, I guess, fire, making the invisible visible, but water maybe letting it remain invisible sometimes.
It's a really good way to say that, water being connected to the invisible realm, because that is, you know, emotions a lot of the time. Yeah, I have so many half thoughts about that. So you really helped clarify something by saying that. So thank you.
Did your half thoughts become full thoughts?
They almost are. Like they're 3/4 thoughts now. It's funny, you know, like I'll just say, like when I was breastfeeding Ruthie, my baby, there, like it was such a weirdly emotional thing for me. And I was so weirded out by this like liquid thing that was happening in my body being like so emotional. And it made me like just think about like the water element and then like this connection to something like just deep and emotional and invisible. And like, I don't even know. Like I said, it's a 3/4 thought. I'm not all the way there yet.
Yeah. Liquidity. I feel like that word has been coming up for me a lot. And yeah, there's something really like confronting about it. Maybe it's just because I don't have any water to speak of in my chart, but like when I think about things liquefying and the emotional tenor of liquids. I don't know. Yeah. There's something it's to something ooze weird around in. Yeah.
So that liquid river can wash us up on the shores of Sagittarius season, I suppose.
Yeah. Throw us on the back of that pony and send us racing across the plains.
That sounds fun. Let's do it. Let's change the tone.
Let's go.
I forget. Do you start? Do I start? I'm way underwater now. I think you start.
We can. Okay. Yeah, I'll start. Yeah.
You're the Aries. This is how we do it. This is on the back end. We decided Bess is the Aries. She should start. So that's what we do.
We decided that I'm the Aries.
Well, we knew.
Well, Sag, you know, and I think I've spoken about it on this podcast before. I feel like Sag is one of those signs, and we all have them, and it's always an interesting kind of touch point and, you know, point of inquiry that I really feel like I have the least connection to, or and I've always sensed, like, I feel like signs in the past, like for a while that was Aquarius, and then Aquarius really came for me. I mean that in a benevolent, loving way, but it's like these archetypes really, they want to be collected. They all want to be in your little caboodle. And so I've been feeling that Sag is like coming for me, I don't know. It's not yet here, but I feel like it's got to be coming for me. Like, I've been waiting for you all my life, Sag, because I don't really understand you. There's been times where I've sort of, I don't want to say feared Sag, but been maybe like had some opinions about it that I think, I don't know. I think historically, and I think you and I have spoken about it before, a little bit of my aversion to Sag has been around this feeling of like being a person who very strongly identifies through Aries and Leo expressions of fire. And there's something a little threatening about thinking about mutable fire. It's like, where are you going to go with that? Like, how are you going to spread the self around? Like, that feels threatening to the concentration of self-expression, I think, that Aries and Leo sort of symbolize. Like, you're just going to take that on the road and just throw it out the back of your convertible. And like, where am I in that egoic process? And so I think that's historically been, you know, part of the reason that Sag has been sort of unknowable to me or a little bit confronting to me, but it started to arrive. And it started maybe a few months ago when I was, I've been working on a couple of book projects this year that'll be out next year for that are focused on tarot. I mean, they're about astrology too, but, you know, sort of teaching tarot through the lens of astrological archetypes. And I was writing a few months ago about the Wheel of Fortune card, which in the tarot is ruled by Jupiter. So it connects us to the realm of Sagittarius. And I was thinking about, or I was feeling into the experience of that card, where there's a certain essence of energy that's about letting things have a life of their own, like initiating a project, you know, having an emotion, like whatever the thing is, and then letting whatever that phenomenon is have its own adventure. And like create its own course through the world, sort of track its own course through the world. And so I started to think about this feeling, and I think it connects us to Gemini energy too, like whether it's the Lover's card or just the energy of Gemini, sort of the way that I always sort of teach it and think about it as kind of like an escort or a companion for life, where it picks something up along the side of the road, walks with it for a little bit, you know, over a threshold, drops it off over here. And I think Sag has that quality too of like, sending things on their own adventure. It's like, we're not going to always understand like where things are going to land or where they're going to go. And it's not just about, for me, it's not just about sort of the traditional way that we think of this like explorer archetype as like Sag being the one to like go out and do the seeking. It's like, it also inspires life to seek more life, like inspires all of these kinds of momentums and like sort of tips off all of these different like potential pathways. And so I started to think about how that kind of sits in the wheel of like the other signs, this willingness to sort of be with each thing in its own life force. Because if we think about fire, one expression of fire as fundamental vitality, self-expression, and then we get it into the realm of the mutable, there's this beautiful honoring that can happen of the life force in every inherent in every single thing. It's like in Aries, we just feel it in the self. And then in Leo, we start to sort of blossom it out. And then in Sag, we're like, oh my God, everything has animus. Everything is alive. Like this is sort of the maximum point of like everything being alive in the world. And so I started to think about the journey, both how that sets us up for Capricorn, which follows it, in terms of the kind of sovereignty that Capricorn sort of is connected with, and the idea that everyone has their own sort of like contained beingness and like right to sort of regalness and right to like dominion, and how that connects us to what we have to do in Sag, which is to like live and let every single thing live. Mm-hmm. And then how that also connects us to what we do, the work of otherness and facing fears of otherness in Libra and Scorpio. It's almost like we go through Libra and Scorpio, we face what's not us. You know, we face in Libra what we think of as not us and as ours and that edge. And then in Scorpio, we've got to go farther and bring otherness into ourselves, even the othering that we've done internally. And then when we get to Sag, we're ready to participate. We're ready to like let everything have its own life force journey, to be respectful of that. And so it's like we live and let die in Scorpio, and then we live and let live in Sag. And, and then the final thing I'll say, so I don't like get too out of control with Sag, you know, boundarylessness or something, is that I've been thinking, and I don't have any like real conclusions on this or insight, I don't think, but I've been trying to feel into you know, for me, all the mutable signs are about a certain quality of subtlety and a certain quality too. I know we just spoke about invisibility as being in the realm of water, but I think there's a certain kind of like drawing out maybe in the mutables of like invisible threads or subtle threads. And I'm just wondering like how the sort of exposure energy of Sagittarius fits into that conversation around subtlety. And, you know, maybe there's something inherently non-subtle about fire energy. I think there sort of is. There's a certain kind of obvious quality to it. But I think there's also, again, if we see that like inherent life force and animus in everything, we see a certain like, I don't want to say softer quality to Sag, but almost like a little like, you know, as like imagining a landscape and then tapping the head of these individual components and like bringing them each alive in their own way. There's something, I don't know. Yeah, that's where I got with it all, but I've got a lot more to learn for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was like a masterclass in like Sagittarius. So I think you're there. I wouldn't worry about I was like taking notes, really, really good stuff. Yeah, I was also thinking a lot about the mutability of Sagittarius and what that means for the sign, because it is weird to have mutable fire. And I was thinking about how, and maybe this ties into the subtlety you're talking about, or maybe it doesn't, but how all of the mutable signs are kind of like a little bit chameleons. You know, there's a little bit, because of that adaptive, shifting nature, they all kind of show up and then become and like interact really closely with the environment and kind of become parts of it or echo back parts of it. You know, Gemini does that. You know, it's definitely a chameleon sign where it takes up accents and attitudes and shares ideas and stands really close to you and, you know, tells you what you want to hear kind of. And Pisces is the ultimate chameleon, like really disappearing and blending into the other signs and holding the compassion and the emotion for all the signs. And even Virgo, I think, you know, is just so closely refining and improving and adapting and analyzing that it's really engaged in the process of what's right around it, you know, in assistance and helping and serving. And then Sag, I was just thinking about all the Sagittarians that I know, and there's such an interest that I think I hadn't really thought about with Sagittarius in what everyone else is doing. And I think that, you know, like what you're talking about with this, and you have a different angle with it, but this sense of like live and let live, you know, and like, everything's alive. There's an interest with Sag in like, how are you living? How are you living? How are you living? And for sometimes this becomes kind of like, what's fashionable? What's trendy? What's current? What's on right now? How do I want to live right now? And that could be one way that this gets expressed. And I think it's kind of, maybe this is a very banal side of Sagittarius, which is why I don't really think about it that much, but I do see it with a lot of the Sagittarians I know. Even though it's such a leadership sign, there's also such a sense of like, what's everyone else doing? You know, like, and this can also come out in, you know, if you're traveling, like the Sagittarius is really invested in like, what's the local way of speaking, the local culture, the local knowing, you know, like as a Sagittarius rising, I remember my travels being like super tuned in, like just walking down the street and like, the first day I was in France chewing gum, knowing that it was like super gauche to chew gum, just knowing it in my bones, like having this sense of like, oh, I should not be chewing gum right now. Like, this is not okay here. And then in like, you know, the next day someone told me, oh yeah, people don't chew gum here. Like, this is not cool. Like, you can't do that. It's like really looked down on. I was like, I knew it. I knew it was like wrong to do. You know, there's just an ultra sense for Sagittarius of like, how do we live here right now? How should we do it? And I think that's where the mutable fire does get like, it's a little odd. It's like, how do I be myself, be my ego, express myself, share myself, live fully through myself when I'm so tuned into how everyone else is living? And I'm so tuned into like what it means, because there's such a curiosity with Sagittarius of like, how are you living? And then a wanting to live that way too. So I think it's a funny little like sub, it's probably like a sub chapter in Sagittarius that doesn't get a lot of like play a lot of the time, but there is just this strong interest in like, what's the collective doing?
Yeah. Well, and when you're speaking, it's making me think about something very, I think, very fundamental to the mutable signs, which is the experience of multiplicity. Mm. It's like the mutable signs are here to multiply things. Yeah. And so if there's like the multiple, if there's many ways to show us, the many ways of being alive, the many ways of relating to the body, like all of these kinds of acts of multiplication. And I think it's, you know, why in certain signs, you know, maybe a little bit more in the realm of like a sign like Pisces, you know, that this sort of geolocation of the self within that immersive environment becomes, you know, the question. But I think it's a question for all immutables of it's deep immersion, it's the experience of multiplicity, all of the ways of being. And then how do we locate ourselves within that midst? How do we like mine, you know, Virgo, of course, like looks at all these multiple ways of being and then sort of figures out the sort of specific contours of the self within that. But all of the mutables, I think, are in that conversation of being, and I loved what you said about them being environmental signs, because I've always had this, and this is like taking that maybe in a different direction, but I've always had this like feeling of a certain, like, sometimes I'll read Sag in kind of a more airy way, because I think there is like, it's kind of an airier, a little bit more kind of panned out sort of expression of fire energy or spacious expression. But I think there's also always been like a kind of earthy quality for me in Sag, like, and maybe it's just because it's sort of like that live and let live quality is like, okay, and this person's doing this with their body and we're going to do, you know, and just get over here and like all of that kind of like the blahness of Sag. But I think there's something really, I don't know, it's just really interesting to think about the mutables now in this environmental sense, like this sense of like the textures of reality and being immersed in environments. And it's almost like I see all the mutables like dropped into one of these like Where's Waldo or like storybooks where you're trying to like locate the animal in the midst of like, and they're just like in the mix. And so it's like, where's the Pisces? You could almost make like a kid's book that had the four mutables like hidden in these environments. And then how do we like kind of pluck them out? Because they're in a process, I think, of like dissolving and disseminating. And so there's a certain disappearance that happens with all four of them. And I never thought about Sag necessarily as like a disappearing act, but I think it is to a certain extent. It's like down the end of the road, off the edge of the, you know, like immersed.
Ooh, that children's book idea is a good one.
I've been like getting lots of hits on children's books lately.
Me too. I wrote a children's book in like 10 minutes. I was like, okay, now how do you get this published? It's difficult. That's another problem. So I was like, you know, writing a little bit about this before the recording. And I was, the symbol that came through for Sagittarius for me right now was like standing at, like being at a water park, and I don't know if this exists, but in my mind's eye, it does. And you go up to the top of like the ladder or the staircase, and you're at this like spot where you can choose to go down like one of like five different water slides. And like this felt like a good symbol for Sagittarius. It was like, okay, which water slide do I want to go down? It'd be the first question. It'd be like, what do I want to believe? Where do I want to go? What direction do I want to take? Where do I want to shoot my arrow, you know? And then you get on the water slide, you pick one, and then you're in it. Like you're going, you're building momentum. You're like, this is the direction. This is what I wanted. I'm following my values. I'm inspired. I'm excited. Like, this is it. This is where I'm going. And you're getting faster and faster, faster and faster. And then you splash, land, you know, in the pool. And you're like, I did it. And then you get out and you go back up to pick a different one, you know? This felt very Sagittarius for all these reasons. It was like, you choose your direction, you build momentum, you have fun, you get excited, there's this impact, and then you're kind of on to the next thing. And I thought, you know, the one thing that Sagittarius really needs to be able to do this, and this is like for all of us as we're living in Sagittarius season, is like, take this on, you know, like do this, like get on the water slide, go down and have fun, build momentum. Like this is, even if you're not a Sagittarius, you get to do this during Sagittarius season. That's the whole point. And to pick which water slide you want to go down, you have to connect to your values. Like you have to know what you value, what is important to you. That's the whole thing with Sagittarius, is like, to get that archer to take aim, there's a philosopher, there's a centaur who's taking aim. The centaur is the archer. And a centaur in, you know, symbolism is this like intelligent being who's part animal, part human. So there's a wildness and there's a thoughtfulness. And with that sense of wildness and thoughtfulness, you can decide and think about and decide what you value, what you're philosophizing, and then take aim with your arrow and shoot for something. Get on the water slide. You know, I'm mixing metaphors, but get on the water slide and like go in a direction and have fun and get excited. And then you change, and then you get to the end of the slide, and there's the mutable side of it. You change, you go do something else. You come up with another great idea. The only thing this metaphor really lacks, I think, is this connection to others that we've been talking about, and how Sagittarius, you know, the water slide's a good metaphor, but it doesn't really show how Sagittarius like wants to play and interact and get in with others and reflect off others.
I just had this really gross. Well, I had like a really gross image. I know Venus and Virgo doesn't always.
It's okay. Go for it. I'll
appreciate
just,
my Venus and
I'll
Aries.
Clutch my pearls.
Nastiness, uncouthness over here. But during Scorpio season, I took this like incredible like road trip all over the U.S. and. Which was very, you know, feels very Saggy actually, but, the trip ended in Vegas, and Vegas is like a landscape I love very deeply, for a lot of reasons, but there is something kind of super Saggy. Well, I think it's a very fiery landscape in a lot of ways. And it's sort of blah and like brash. But when you had the image of the people flying into the swimming pool, I was in like the pool at the hotel, and there was like this megaphone or like amplification that came on that told everybody to get out of the pool because of like a biohazard.
Oh, no.
That like some, the you know, worst. Like some material had been like,
yeah,
released into
I
the
know
pool.
What
but
happened.
When you, yeah, when you were talking about the collective, I don't know, I just had this image of like that, you know, like there is the experience of like when Sag is like just in the mix, like going for it, trying it, like whatever, throwing it against the wall. And in that kind of collective, when they hit the mark or whatever, and something just sort of explodes or splats, or like that's yeah. the point where they're like kind of connected to the, it's almost like when we talk about, you know, because a lot of times I think people have an association with Sag and like being lucky. Which I think is like something we spoke about maybe on a previous podcast with Jupiter around this idea of like, it's not that any sign has like the corner on being luckier than another sign. It's the element of risk, and it's the element of like, who knowsness, and then creating space and creating extra gaps for life to intervene, you know, and something that we get through the Temperance card, that kind of like working with divine or spirit or God in that way. And so I think there's something in that moment where like Sag kind of hits it running and splats, that is like there's a connection to God in that moment, because there's that feeling of just like, well, who the fuck knows? Like, yeah, I chose this thing. I'm now in the midst of the momentum of flying into this thing. And then there's kind of a collective splat where I'm in this very non-binary way of like, maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, who knows? And then up to try it again. I don't know.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I love that. Biohazards and all.
God is in the splat. That's the takeaway.
And really, really, truly, and all those microorganisms.
Yeah. Oh my God. Microorganisms. That's a whole other episode. I don't know if I told you, but I recently went on kind of like a journey where I discovered that microorganisms are like my like animal workers.
Yes, you did tell me, and I have not stopped thinking about it. I am really into it. Yeah. So I think like that's a good talk about Sag, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's also very interesting to think about the aspect of Sagittarius. I have my really good friends who are also my neighbors right now, which is great. They're a couple where one is a Sag moon and one is a Gemini moon. And then I think there's a Sag moon, Gemini moon, and then there's another overlay where they do Sag Gemini in the opposite way somehow. So one Sag Gemini and the other Sag Gemini, but they're both kind of coming together. Can't remember if it's the rising signs or what, but they are in this constant kind of back and forth between who gets to know how to do things. You know, and like, who is the knower and who is the learner? in their relationship. It's like a big theme for them. Like who gets to be the expert? And they're both kind of course, they're both expert in some of the same areas. And they're both very used to being expert in these same areas. They're like, no, I'm the expert. But it's like, hit, you know, that's where they get caught up in some moments is like, wow, are you the expert? Are you the expert? And it's great. You know, like I have this in my own life. Like I definitely have that like, well, actually, let me tell you, you know, with my Sagittarius rising, when I was a kid, I remember I would make my dad play this game with me where he would have to like tell me a word, try to tell me a word I didn't know. I was sure I knew all the words. And he had to like try to tell me a word that I didn't know, which I guess I didn't realize I was, you know, very caught up in myself. I didn't realize he was making it easy on me, you know, like right. There were plenty of words I didn't know, but I was convinced I knew all the words. And so there's this thing with Sag of this like, no, I have to know. I have to, this is where I'm safe, is in my knowing. As in me being this expert, as in me being this thought leader, you know, and like being able to lead you somewhere with my thoughts and the way I think about things. And it's very much like a beautiful part of the sign and I think an Achilles heel of the sign where it's like you can get caught up in your own, like your questions, like there's a thing for Sag and maybe for all of us during Sagittarius season where we want to know the answer and we're good at asking the questions, but we sometimes feel insecure in the question too. Where Gemini can feel very confident in the question and very like, yeah, I have a question. And Sagittarius feels very confident in the answer and like in answering the question, you know, and like in the being the knower. And so letting the question hang, I think, is a good practice for the season. You know, maybe just sitting in the question and not knowing the answer. Maybe we don't have to know. What happens then? What do we lose? Do we lose ourselves? Do we lose? Is it ego that we're really losing in that moment? And is that okay? Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that really taps the kind of momentum quality of the mutability of Sag. Because if we think about Sag, well, think about all the mutables. To a certain extent, they're like the dot, dot, dot. They're like the ellipsis experience of the zodiac because they dissolve a season. They break up matter, you know? And so there's kind of this interesting paradox that I think sits in Sag that you're getting at, you know, with this kind of like the knowing and the knowing sitting alongside the who knows, like, yeah, that kind of that what if, that what ifness and the fill in the blankness, which I think will also sort of sets us up in an interesting way for Aquarius energy, where there's like a very wide birth around or breath around, you know, the bigger mystery, which then of course, you know, enters us into Pisces and like all of it is leading and like Sagittarius leads us off in this final quartet, you know? And so much of that quartet, I mean, Capricorn, we can get into it next season and see what's mine, but so much of that quartet, at least Aqua and Pisces are about this ultimate ellipsis, you know, at the end of the, mm-hmm. at the end of the road. And so Sagittarius looks out across that line, you know, that's, it starts that, you know, that kind of unfolding. So,
yeah. The ellipses.
Yeah. It's interesting. This idea of like surety too. I mean, it's making me think, well, we can leave it here, but, you know, I guess just, you know, having sort of so deeply swallowed down Aries and Leo archetypes, I never really have related to the idea of like seeking comfort in knowledge or knowingness. Mm. And like on that, from someone looking outside into my life, they might think like, really? But I don't have that internal experience. Mine is more like seeking comfort in the specialness of something. Like it's that leonine feeling, you know, and I think each of the fire signs seek comfort, you know, in a different way. And it's like the leonine specialness or the Aries just ability to make a dent, to see that you've like done something, like you've left some deposit. And the Sag quality of like the comfort. And I was speaking actually recently to a friend who has some kind of Sag, doesn't have any Sag planets, but has like a kind of a packed ninth house. And she was talking about, how invested she is in like signaling to other people that she already knows something. And she has some Capricorn too, but it was like, you know, like that's sort of where safety is found. It's like, if someone brings up a topic, she needs other people to know that she already knows about it. And I was like, wow, I seek, you know, and I have my own fucking bullshit, whatever. But like, I seek that kind of security in a very different way. And I don't like, yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting to think about, you know, and you can think about this with any of the signs and looking to that their trinity to start to learn, elemental trinity, to start to learn about the ways in which they sort of stabilize themselves or what it is they're seeking or valuing. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, it's a good lead in really to our chart because our questioner is a Sag Sun and an Aquarius Moon, if I have that right. So
Sag Sun, Aquarius Moon, Gemini Rising. We got it all, baby.
Yeah.
So our listener doesn't mind being named. So we will call him
Anonymous.
Ethan. Not anonymous. We'll call him Ethan because that is his name. And Ethan writes, "What can I do to invite inspiration and excitement back into my life when I feel lost and disconnected from my joy?"
God, this is such a good question. Such a great question. And I love it because it's so Sagittarius. It's such a Sagittarius question. It's like, I want to be inspired. How do I get that inspiration? It's so much about fire. And it's a great question for everyone, I think. You know, it's like a great collective question.
Yeah.
So I was happy to see it. So I have, you know, looked at the chart already and thought about the question already. So I'll tell you what I thought about. So Ethan, when I was first looking at your chart, I wanted to look at the fifth house cusp because when you ask about joy, this is where I would quickly look if I have access to the whole chart. There's other places that we could take this and other things we could look at for joy, for sure. Absolutely. But the fifth house cusp is a good place because this is the house of how do you feel just so joyful and so expressive of yourself. It's a house that's connected to the sign of Leo. And it's where we connect into our childlike joy. Like, and so how when we were children, we just felt full of life and just ready to play and ready to explore the world without layers of, you know, kind of maybe all of residual layers holding us back yet. There's just kind of a freshness to this area. And so I wanted to see what sign is on the cusp of your fifth house, which is Virgo. And the ruler of Virgo is Mercury for everyone. The ruler of Virgo is Mercury. And so Mercury for you, Ethan, is the ruler of your fifth house. And so I wanted to see what is Mercury doing in your chart. So if there's a ruler to this kind of theme of joy in your life, it would be Mercury. So what's Mercury up to? Well, you have Mercury in Sagittarius. So this is great because it ties right into the theme. And also Mercury in your chart is not making any aspects to any other planets. So this is unusual to have a planet that is kind of hanging out alone, not talking to any other planets in your chart. It doesn't happen that often that someone has this. And so I think that this is a good start for us is like this joy when you're not accessing it, when there's nothing that's drawing you to it, it kind of like hangs and you're trying to figure out how to access it, but you don't have like a great avenue to it all the time. This is why you ask the question, because you're like, I don't know, this thing happens and it lives and then it kind of like, I can't get to it because there's no other planets making a connection to it. I can't get there. And your Mercury is in the seventh house in the sign of Sag, as I mentioned. So I did a little like intuitive meditation about this. I wanted to call on, you know, your higher self to see what this was. And the first thing that came through was that you're in that, like when you're trying to, when you're just like trying to have fun, have pleasure, et cetera. And actually a lot of times in your life, there's a thing that happens where you kind of feel like there's or the vision was like that you're in a fun house and you're looking in the mirrors and the mirrors are distorted. And this is kind of connected to the seventh house. So it's like sometimes when you're thinking about things, there can be this sense of like, what do other people think? Or like, what do they want from me? Or who am I? Or how do they see me? Or how do I see myself? And I'm getting kind of distorted and I'm getting kind of lost and I'm feeling lost. And so at those times, to help yourself with how you're thinking about things, you really need to kind of just take yourself by the hand and step yourself out of this fun house, out away from the mirrors. And so to do that, you have to partner yourself. Like you have to create like another person in your mind's eye, you know, and this persona could be anything, anyone that makes sense to you, but like a caring part of you, a part of you that can hold you by the hand and can help you step away and step somewhere else and take you to a really quiet place where you can really be there with yourself and partner yourself. And in this place, you need to listen to yourself without analyzing. And so this is like the Mercury ruler of Virgo, having Virgo on the cusp of your fifth house. When it comes to your joy at times, like you can get really analytical or you can feel like, I don't know how to have fun. Is this fun for me? I don't know how to be myself. I don't know how to be creative. Is this fun? Is this what I want to do? This analysis can spin. When you have Mercury without making any aspects to any other planets in the chart, there can kind of be a spinning that's happening, or like it can, you can forget, you can get confused. I also have Mercury not making aspects to other planets in the chart. So I like feel connected to this, but there can be like kind of like a forgetfulness or a spinning. And so taking yourself by the hand and kind of stepping away and just being there for yourself and then talking to yourself without analyzing. And this is the key. You have to be able to figure out how can I reflect back to myself, talk to myself and listen to myself without analyzing myself. And this is hard because with Virgo on the cusp of your fifth house, it could have been that as a child, you were somehow sent too quickly into analyzing things or somehow sent too quickly into helping other people or being like needing to do or think or help or serve too quickly without having a lot of time for yourself to just have fun and enjoy. And so now at this point, you need to be able to listen to yourself. Just say what's on your mind. So you look at this persona you create in your mind's eye and you just say, oh my God, you know, like this is hard for me. And then you say back to yourself like, oh shoot, Ethan, sounds like you're having a really hard time with this. Like this is really hard right now. Like this hurts. You don't have to analyze. You don't have to be like, oh, well, you're thinking this because of this and this person said this to you. And now you need to do this. And now you should go here. And this is coming from that old thing in childhood. And this is because your mother said this to you. You don't have to do all that. You just have to sit there with yourself and be like, oh, shoot, this is really hard. I need to keep telling how hard this is. You know, are you listening? Yes, I'm listening. You keep telling me. You keep telling me how hard it is. And just kind of listen to yourself and like sit there in your mind's eye. And then that moves the friction, that moves the fray, that helps you get unfrazzled, that helps you move everything away emotionally, all the thoughts that are kind of clogging up the wheels. And then you can be having joy and having inspiration and having excitement. Because as Mercury in Sagittarius, you're primed for it. You're primed to be like, that inspiration is what drives you forward. It is what makes you do everything in your life. It's your entire context, your entire framework for how you think about things. So you really need to access it. And this is why you're asking the question, because it feels so vital for you. But to get to it, you have to move some of this frazzledness away. Like some of the overthinking and the analysis has to move so that you can just get into the inspiration. And that's where the issue feels like it's landing for you. And so I would recommend doing this process where you just sit there with yourself. Oh, shoot, this is really hard. Sounds like you're having a hard time with this. Keep telling me about it. Keep talking to me about it. Like keep sharing. I want to hear how you feel. I want to hear, you know, just without analyzing. If you can do that, I think it'll really help. That's my take.
Oh my God. A hot take.
Hot take.
A really hot take. Oh my God. This is like, I don't know, this process of like listening to yourself in this way and saying things. It got me thinking about a conversation I had a few weeks ago with a person who has a Gemini moon, which of course Gemini is, you know, it's a different expression, but we're still in the realm. You know, we've got Gemini in the mix here in this chart. We got Sag on that. On that polarity point. And she was talking about, she was asking the question, if other people hear themselves thinking, And I was like, well, tell me more about what you mean, because I don't think so.
As a Libra moon, I absolutely know what she means. I 100%. This is my whole life. So yes, air sign moons do, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and she was describing to me like, okay, when you're saying something to me, I then hear the echo of what you've just said. And then I hear my own thought. And then I sort of formulate it. And she's like, you know, we were in a restaurant and she was reading. She was like, when I read this menu, I can hear myself saying the words in my own mind. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was like, I do not have the experience.
Yeah.
But then we were talking with another woman who was there, who was like an earthy moon. And she also did not have the experience. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was thinking about this idea of the spaciousness of air and that gap that's created. And it's the gap that allows all this infusion of multivalent prismatic perspective. It allows a kind of spacious way of possibility. And it also creates an internal conversation that's like very, very complex. And, you know, it's like, wow, like to have this kind of way that you're suggesting is like, it just feels like it's very powerful and like could be like healing for all sorts of air moons and like people with air energy in their chart. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I have a Libra moon and I think it's relevant. I used to I've spent a lot of time by myself and I also read a lot. And I used to talk to myself as if I was narrating a story where I would say, Sandy walked across the street. And I would be doing this. I'd be walking across the street. I'd be like, Sandy walked across the street and she saw a rock on the ground and she exclaimed, oh my goodness, what a big rock. You know, like I would like have like the, then she said, and she nudged the person next to her. Like I would literally write out like what was happening as it was happening with like parentheses and like, and apostrophes and like little, like she said mildly, you know, like it was so I get this person.
Oh my God. And it's making me think too. And I think we've talked about it before on the podcast, but as a little kid, I didn't narrate in that way, but I had this thing where I had to, when I was doing mundane tasks that I couldn't abide, I would imagine myself as this actress called Lilac Moore playing Bess Matassa in life, in like the show Life. And I had this whole like theme song and I wasn't narrating, but I was like amplifying. It was very Fire Moon, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, I had to kind of amplify the everydayness.
Yeah.
I had to take myself into this like grandiose scenario. So yeah, this could be like a point for listeners to think about the kind of stories you told to yourself when you were a kid and the voice that you talked to yourself in or what that looked like. It could be revelatory. So when I started first looking at this chart, as per usual, I heard some music and I got this very strong image. And the song was the David Byrne Talking Heads song, Once in a Lifetime, the one that's like, this is not my beautiful life, this is not my beautiful house, you know, the song. And then the image I saw was, I think it was the Kool-Aid. It was like the 80s commercial where the giant Kool-Aid jug with the smiley face on it busts through the wall. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Like the kids would be like, I'm just so thirsty, I'd love a drink of Kool-Aid. And then the guy would like the character would bust through the wall. So I was like, all right, okay. Not sure where we're going to go with this, but we'll see. So I want to say first and foremost that, and maybe this seems like sort of an obvious thing to state or a kind of overarching thing to state, but there's such a conversation in this chart around what I might call density and the experience of levity. We have these very dense energies in the chart that I might associate with, you know, Capricorn placements, Scorpio placements, Mars in Scorpio, really close to Pluto, Venus in Capricorn, Saturn, you know, the pack of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune there as well. And then there are the three of the zodiac's lightest travelers, Aquarius, Gemini, Sag, that want to escape, evade, disembody, levitate. And all of this density in Capricorn and Scorpio that creates this other line of tension, this downward current. And so there's a kind of creative tension over the course of your whole life around the experience of weight. And so I read in your question, and this is not to deny the validity of experiences of joy or excitement or inspiration, But there's something, I think, in the like, you got to get down to get up a little bit in the chart. And I think there's a little bit of splitting that feels like it sometimes happens around that. When there's a denser experience or an experience that's not particularly invigorating or levitating, there's so much in your chart that wants to get away from that because there's a deep sort of soul fear of like being buried alive kind of in that energy or being buried in the density of an experience of whatever you might think of as the opposite of invigoration or excitement or joy. And so I think that's all to say, like, just a sweet message around that line of tension and how you experience that. And I started to kind of feel into just this idea of like, when you're in a moment, and again, this is not to like force yourself into an experience that feels like painful or traumatic or anxiety producing, but when you feel disconnected, quote, disconnected, that's the word in your question, from your joy, what else is it a chance to connect to? Because there's a kind of connectivity that I think happens in the denser energies of Capricorn, of Scorpio, that you might not think of as the kind of invigorating connection that you're always seeking in these moments of sort of like soul excitement. But the downward current is calling you. And I don't know where that's going to land with you, but my call to you is to not resist it. Because some of that denser matter, some of that sort of more private, internal, thicker experience of embodied kind of experience of like taking in a feeling or sitting with an emotion, whatever that is, there's a way that you can emerge from that place. Like you don't have to fight against going to that place. That's not the antithesis or that's not the opposite from these other energies that you want to sort of fly into for inspiration. And I wonder what can be found underground. And maybe that's the experience of kind of getting into more bodily experiences in these moments or somatic experiences when you feel disconnected or, you know, physically sitting down on the ground or digging underneath something. I mean, there's such exploratory and expansive energy in this trinity of your sun, moon, rising, but there's also this whole life beneath the ground. And it's interesting to think about like Venus and Mars in your chart, you know, being placed in these, like Venus is basically, it's like, the pleasure and the power in your chart are in Capricorn and Scorpio, which are these thicker kind of energies, these water and earth energies, which are this downward current. And so the fundamental kind of flowering of your life actually happens much lower than you might imagine. Like it's kind of like how low can you go? And I don't mean like low, like having like a experience that feels bad necessarily, but even like lower in your body feeling it. Lower in your feet feeling it. And these archetypes are really coming out to play now. We've got some activation of them. You know, of course, we have some activation through, I forget what degree Uranus is. Now I'm looking at a chart view without Uranus's degree, but, you know, we've got sort of Uranus and range kind of facing off against your Mars and Pluto and Scorpio. We've got Pluto, I think, sitting on your, is it sitting on Venus? Now I'm looking at the wrong. Let me go back and look at the actual transits here.
It is.
It's Pluto sitting directly on Venus right now in Capricorn. Saturn sitting directly on your North Node in Aquarius right now. So these kinds of, these energies of like the Capricornian part of you, the Scorpionic part of you have come to play. And you know, I'm also sort of had a question around this idea of like survivalism. You know, there's such a survivalist energy in Capricorn and Scorpio, like this kind of durability and endurance. And the other energies in your chart aren't necessarily like tapped into the idea of durability or consistency or sameness. They seek more difference. They seek rupture. They seek interruption of sameness. And so I wonder too about just like being conscious of maybe like the containers you sort of create to kind of experience joy and the sort of setup and maybe not being afraid of or being willing to touch into a certain consistent practice around that. And also like I kind of had these visions of you like in these survivalist modes, and maybe this is like a wilderness experience for you, or maybe it's just like some physical activity where you can really feel just like the fundamental alive quality of your body, but something where you're sort of braving almost in this kind of like life or death. I mean, it doesn't have to be actual life or death stakes, of course, but like something like, you know, wilderness exploration or a really invigorating movement of your body or something that drops you a little bit lower and into these currents. You know, and then lastly, I guess I'll just say that vis-a-vis the image of the Kool-Aid guy breaking through and the song, there's something about that opposition that happens in you between a Capricorn energy or a Scorpio energy and these energies that want to evade and escape that I think can sometimes get externalized. It's like setting up almost like false, but the feeling that the external world is constricting you. And maybe that comes in the form of like an authority figure or a situation that you feel that you didn't create and you have to rail against, or all these kinds of setups where it's like your soul kind of creates this power play of like something keeping you down so you can get away from it, you know, and that kind of battle sort of plays out. And I wonder what it might mean to bring increased consciousness to that and like take that, shift that a little bit out of the realm of the external and more into like you creating the solid container or the boundary or the border or the sort of like the space of like containment. It's almost like creating your own escape room for yourself. I don't know how this actually plays out in reality, but like creating some sort of parameters so you don't have to feel that the parameters are externally imposed or like dropped down on you. And then you can kind of like liberate your own energy through this interplay between like creating a strong container and then busting out of your own container versus having to kind of rail against it in the external environment. And then just final note, David Byrne, super dense, earthy energy in his chart, and then Mars and Scorpio like yourself. But I think the crux of that song being like about that kind of feeling of like externally imposed standards, this sort of Saturnine experience of life of like, how did I get here? Did I choose these constrictions? All of that. And, you know, just building increased consciousness and playing a little bit with that kind of setup of like escaping from your own constriction almost, which sounds deeply bizarre. But anyway, I'll leave it there.
It's really good. Yeah, I think it's a perfect time for that with Saturn on the North Node. It's like, you know, thinking about integrating that Saturn and saying like, these are the boundaries that I want to stand by, or these are the limitations that are my own that I can have for myself. A lot of integration for you here, Ethan. A lot of integration.
Own that Saturn. Saturn ownership. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So shall we pull a few cards?
Oh, yeah.
Take us on down. Down the highway. So we're just going to pull a couple of cards, or a trinity of cards, to just kind of frame us out and pose the question, what else does Sagittarius want us to know? You know, we can use this for this particular Sagittarius season, but also in keeping with just our amplified and expanded understanding of this sign. So I'm going to pull three cards. All right. So I've got the King of Cups, the Page of Pentacles, and the Seven of Cups. All right, just going to treat these sort of one at a time. But this is an interesting experience, I think, that we've been getting at during the whole conversation. The idea of like many ways to live and be, and this kind of expanded consciousness around being able to hold the multiplicity of things. The King of Cups is actually a card that I associate with the sign of Scorpio usually. So this sort of brings us into the realm of water, which is where Sagittarius comes from. It's where all fire comes from. All fire signs follow water signs. And so in the King of Cups, we are at maximum empathy. We're at maximum humanness. We're able to really be in the expanse of an emotional ocean. No problems, no judgment. Really to be able to welcome that experience in. And so it makes me think about how well Scorpio sets us up for that experience of Sag, of just total live and let livingness in all of the different longings and experiences, emotional experiences, that this sign can also be a guide for us in emotional holding and emotional width. And I think it connects us really strongly to Seven of Cups as well, which is another card that's ruled by Scorpio. This is a card that has an association with Venus and Scorpio. And so it takes us in. We'll see a lot of presentations of this card with like a multiplicity of offerings in different cups. And we're sort of trying to figure out kind of which to sample. But there's a living in the longing that this card really wants us to experience as well. Like no good, bad, totally breaking the good, bad binary of desire. Being able to sort of follow obsessions, to follow longings where they lead. And this really lubricates us to that experience. And then finally, the Page of Pentacles, I think this kind of gets us back to the question and sort of, you know, some of the things that you said so beautifully in the beginning, Sandy, about the environmental immersion of mutable signs. Page of Pentacles has an earthy quality through the pentacles, but all the pages bring us to their element anew on the other side of enormous amounts of experience. And so I think it speaks to me about Sagittarius's sort of finality as the final fire sign in the wheel of the year. And yet it's like prepping us also for the beginning, the new beginning of the calendar year. And Page of Pentacles for me is like, can you be in, you know, with regard to this conversation, can you be in proximity to the pleasure of the animus that lives in everything? It's like, you know, going through the sensual world and really honing in on some piece of it and letting it kind of like letting yourself sort of get immersed in a particular sort of physical detail of the world. And also like knowing on some level, and this is, I don't know where this will land, but knowing that this world was made for you, I think that there's something about Sagittarius that like this final adventure of fire, where we're going to go out into the experience of life and say like, damn, like all this was done. I mean, it's done for each one of us, of course, but all this was done for me. Like I get to go out and have these experiences, these embodied experiences of all of this, you know, and taking us, I think, out of the realm a little bit of the analysis or the need to necessarily seek the ultimate belief system or the ultimate truth. It's like the pure pleasure in this kind of adventurous unfolding of experiential learning with this creation that was created all for you, you know, in this very fire-centric, that's a very fire-centric kind of reading of it. But I think Page of Pentacles wants us to kind of feel into that as well. So I know that was a little bit of a quick and dirty, but hopefully it'll give you some new ways to kind of think about those cards. And I think it's giving me a new way to kind of think about Sag. So
yeah.
Do you have any hits, Sandy, on these cards?
Just thinking about, it's not a full hit, maybe another three-quarter thought, but just thinking about the King of Cups and what you're talking about, you know, reflecting off of what you're talking about how this Sagittarius season may be differently from other ones, or maybe they're always, but just kind of trying to connect into the compassion of things and letting that help guide your values, and that like the heart and the water that's coming through in two of these three cards is such an important place to begin. And I guess it's where we started this conversation, weirdly, like it kind of all connected back to the water element, like more so than our other topics. You know, we felt like the lead in from Scorpio to Sag was such a important part of this conversation today. So it's like we really have to start in an emotional place to get to our values during this time. Like we have to start with compassion and heart. And if we don't do that way, then we're kind of missing something important. So,
yeah. And there's something like that. I mean, when we think about all fire coming out of water, if we think about fire as this sort of fundamental life force of the vitality of the individual on some level, that individuation process, it's like, it has to start in like the experience of fusional allowing, like that experience of like, and there is, I think there is something that, you know, with when working with fire energy, it's a very high octave expression of fire, because when fire is, you know, runs super too hot and myopic, it becomes like, you know, a complete sort of egoic fold into one experience of the self. But at its heart, like fire kind of doesn't give a fuck. Like it is that kind of embracing that, like if I'm in the fullness of me, you too can like flourish. Like everyone has room here. And there's something that I think yeah, that water gives us like as a conduit or as a way to reach that point where we can kind of bust out, but also bust out in the boldness without, with every single other, you know, kind of phenomenon or being on the surface, also being in the fullness of their beingness, like mm-hmm. this kind of ultimate spaciousness. And I think, you know, with Sag giving us the ultimate spacious experience of fire, like, yeah, there is this, this quality of allowing and what you're saying, like compassion, that I don't think I had really fully tapped in this sign before, you know, hearing it in that way or thinking about it coming from water in that way.
Yeah. I never thought of that. So we've uncovered something new for us here.
Yeah. Hopefully new and exciting for you too. So multiplicities, biohazards, Kool-Aid breakthroughs, and infinite compassion. We are sending you lots of love and longing and expansiveness wherever you are. And we can't wait to meet in Capricorn season.
Thanks for joining us. If you want to ask a question about your own chart, you can do so at starpartypodcast.com/question. And visit my website, that's sandycitron.com, for courses and mini readings and regular astrology readings. I'll be doing one question readings on new moons and full moons. So sign up at my website, sandycitron.com. And Besmatasa's website is besmatasa.com. We'll see you soon.